Sports Radio 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
Oh, you do it.
All the time. A division of Bell Media. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at www.sportsradio1290.com, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my good friends Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert he is. Michael Remus, the usual operator of the R-Desk, is down at the MTS Iceplex gathering some comments and interviews with the Winnipeg Jets. He'll be joining us in a little while's time as we get that audio up on the air. Gentlemen, Winnipeg Jets training camp kicked off officially yesterday with the physicals, but today was really the day that it gets exciting and gets underway. We were down there. You saw him on the ice. You know, thousands of people that were joining us at the MTS Iceplex. You know, it's finally here. We've been talking about it since May 31st, but it's finally here.
Yeah. Good morning, Drew. Good morning, Richie. Good morning, Tim. Yeah. You know what? This is
the first chance that we've seen had to see all the Jets on the ice, and it was pretty much 90% full, and it was great to see. You know, we watched the first group and a little bit of the second group. The Jets training camp roster is broken into three different groups, A, B, and C, and they're each going today. And you know, they were cheered going on the ice, they were cheered leaving the ice, and it's just great to see that everyone's finally getting to see their Winnipeg Jets, you know, on the ice, and it's great. Dustin Byfuglien got probably the biggest ovation of the morning while we were there, and it's very exciting for hockey fans, Drew.
You know what I mean? I think it's best summed up by the ovation the players got. You know, the context of everything is the ovation the players got. Both the Group A and Group B, but most importantly, I think Group A. That was the first time the fans were in there, and they really got to see the team or portions of the team on the ice. And I thought it was funny in that the players skated on the ice, the crowd went crazy, and then they stretched.
Yeah.
In the context of it, it's still a practice, but that's the excitement level in it, and it's at a point where, you know, it's only going to continue to increase, and maybe reach a pinnacle at October 9th. Who knows? It could very well exceed that, but you could. The excitement was palpable in the MTS Plex, and the fans who were there. I bet you the fans who were there, a lot of them probably, if not all, in fact, the majority of them, don't have season tickets.
Probably not. I mean, I think if you looked around, it was a very young, I mean, it was a lot of
family-oriented crowd.
Yes, very family-oriented. Yeah, moms and dads with their young kids who probably, aren't necessarily attending any games, or if they are, maybe they're attending one or so. But it was certainly a young audience. I mean, I pulled up to the MTS Iceplex about 8:30 this morning. And, I mean, I knew it would be busy. I knew there'd be people there. But when I got there at 8:30 and the parking lot was jammed,
yeah,
and the stands were busy with people, and there was nobody coming on the ice for another half an hour, I was like, wow, this is going to be this fever pitch. I knew it's not going away anytime soon, but it's really, you can feel it and how palpable it really is starting today.
And, Drew, for those people that have been to the Iceplex, I mean, it's not only is it a beautiful facility, it's very fan-friendly. I mean, the seats are great. You can basically, you know, stand next to your favorite player and people are communicating. I mean, Dustin Byfuglien came out to, a large ovation, and he was smiling. And, I mean, they're having a lot of fun out there. They're saluting the fans, interacting with the fans. And it's been really good to see, because the rookie camp was also exciting, but this is now different. You're getting to see the guys that you're going to have on the back of your jersey. So it's the first day, and this was the only open practice.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure you guys will, because I frequently am wrong, and you frequently like to correct me, but I was under the impression that next Saturday's practice at first was also going to be at the Iceplex, but apparently that's changed. Either I had the information wrong to begin with, but this is the only open practice for fans to go see the Winnipeg Jets before the exhibition season kicks off on Tuesday night.
Right, so if you're driving in your car right now, there's Group C on the ice, I believe, right now. or soon to be on the ice. So you might as well, if you want to see them play, get down there at the MTS Iceplex right now. But
there is room to get in there right now at the moment.
Yeah, and Drew, you mentioned that you guys were at the MTS Center for media orientation, and me and Richie weren't there, but I think True North decided to switch that, and now this will be the only open practice. But we should probably get confirmation about that today. But I think the point was that maybe it was a scheduling issue, but
whatever it is, we'll figure it out. I mean, you know, and we're going to obviously break down what we saw in the Group A. We saw the entire Group A practice.
You have to understand in terms of practice, not only is it the first team practice and the first experience with a lot of these players with Claude Noel, but it's also a general open practice.
Yeah,
the coaches aren't going to be showing anything in an open practice. It was just hockey drills, basic hockey drills that you probably see at most levels in the NHL, just getting warmed up and working on some things, but nothing extensive. And there's a very significant talent gap with the people in camp right now.
Yeah. Yep.
You have your higher-end guys and guys who have no chance of making the roster. So you have both, and it's nice to see both on the ice, but people have to, you know, just remember
temper
that.
Their expectations.
Yeah, no, Richie's right. A lot of the drills that they were doing today in Group A, and we saw a little bit of Group B, as Drew mentioned, there was a lot of flow drills, a lot of skating drills, passing, a lot of warming up the goalie, and you're right. We're not going to see the Jets get into too many systems, even tomorrow, but as the week goes on, maybe Monday, they'll start to work on it a bit. But you're right, this is very much
a work in progress.
So, even though, everyone is analyzing every little move, especially us, it is kind of like a getting to know you type of practice.
Before we go into what we saw on the ice this morning, as much analysis as you can do when it's, like you said, the first team skate really of the training camp. I want to talk about Dustin Byfuglien. He met with the media for the first time yesterday.
Yes.
Has he been given a rough ride unnecessarily?
You know that he just weighed in. They released his weight on TSN this morning.
Yeah, it was in Gary Lawless's column today in the Free Press as well.
It's less than it was last year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, it sounds like, and I don't think that since his run-in with the authorities in Minnesota, where he supposedly weighed in at 290 pounds, he's been able to lose 25 pounds.
He didn't look like 290 pounds on the ice today. And if his weigh-in was accurate, if his weigh-in is any indication, then that was wrong. But the way I look at it, I've actually, been taking a different stance. I think that, I realize that, when alcohol is involved and you're operating a motorboat, that it's something that needs to be covered in the media. But as it turns out, I've said this before, I think that I realize that newspapers, have to sell, they have to, cover what sells and all that. But I think that it's been blown out of proportion. I mean, simply put,
he passed the test of the breathalyzer, so, I mean, the blood test, I'm not really sure what they wanted it for.
It sounded like they wanted a urine test.
No, a urine test, okay. He passed the breathalyzer, so I'm not really sure what they want in that regard. Any event, he's here, and I think people need to understand something about, the weight. You can joke about it, etc., but a lot of players in the National, all you hear about is Gary Roberts and the programs that he has certain players on, whether it be Steve Stamkos or Cody Hodgson or certain other players that he has with his crazy diet and things like that. Many players are in tip-top shape and things, and they are in, they're working hard in terms of they're eating right and they're training
and
right.
And they have the 4% body fat and everything
else. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be the best hockey player. I think that's what people need to realize, right? Like Drew Doughty, let me just point it out, Dustin Byfuglien might be playing at the weight that he's playing at, and this is the way he always plays at, and that's the player he is. There might be a player who's cut and in great shape and is just not as good of a hockey player as him. Drew Doughty, for people to know, Drew Doughty isn't exactly in the best shape in the world. Mario Lemieux, when he played, wasn't in the best shape in the world. Some of these guys are just naturally that gifted. So take it. I want to see, maybe his weight is an issue to some, but if it's not affecting his play on the ice,
what does it matter?
Maybe that's the weight he's comfortable at, and I think it was Mark Stewart saying he's never going to be cut. People have certain body types.
Yeah.
Certain guys have six-packs. Like, friends, certain guys are ripped and defined, and all they do is eat fast food, and they never work out. And the guy who works out all the time isn't ripped and defined, and doesn't mean he's in any better shape, just means he looks better. And who really cares how he looks? First of all, they're playing with equipment. Like, this is not superficial. It's how you produce on the ice. That's all I care about.
If Dustin Byfuglien came to camp and he weighed 235 pounds and he was lean as can be,
I wouldn't be good.
He probably wouldn't be as good a player as he is, right? Because he uses his size to his advantage.
That's right.
And, I mean, I don't think, and that's the, people get fixated on numbers. And it's, you know, certainly if the number that had been reported was accurate, and the, you know, it seems like it isn't, because it's hard to drop 25 pounds in, you know, a span of 2 weeks. But, you know, he probably plays most comfortably at 270 pounds, 265, 270 pounds. And he might do so, you know, with a little bit of a pot belly. But if that's how he performs at the top level, what should it be of anybody's business what he actually weighs in on in terms of a number?
I mean, if people not remember the 2010 Stanley Cup run or the 2009 playoffs, his nickname is Big Buff. He's always been a big guy. And now it turns out that whatever, you're right, Drew, people do get fixated on numbers, and it turns out that number that was reported was inaccurate. And, you know, there was two parts of the story. There was the weight issue and the boating while intoxicated issue. And as far as I'm concerned, both issues have gotten way too much media time, and people have, I realize the media needs to cover it. But again, to me, I don't even really need to hear about this stuff. It doesn't affect my opinion about Big Bufflin at all.
You want to see him perform on the ice. Exactly. You want to see how he performs. Yeah. And if he's not performing as he should be, that's when you're gonna get your hackles up and maybe criticize.
The question is, last year he didn't have the best second half, and is the second half, was that based on the fact that he wasn't in shape, or is that based upon just the odds going the other way, or just the team wasn't playing well? We'll see. If he continues, for example, for this year, he wears down the second half and doesn't have has a poor second half again,
then maybe there's a maybe a conditioning issue.
Richie,
we don't have sample right now, because the seasons before, he was playing forward 12, 13, 14 minutes a game with shotgun with some really good players, and you couldn't tell. He wasn't playing enough.
What I found interesting is, you know, he's getting sort of a rough ride from some of the media or in the papers, but then when he steps onto the ice today in Group B,
standing ovation.
The loudest ovation, I think, was close between him and Andrew Ladd, who was in Group A. So, you know,
I didn't think it was close. I thought Bufflin
fans
was
love
given
him.
That
love
cheer for the support. Ladd didn't need the support because they're trying to, you know, put their weight behind no pun intended, put their weight behind Bufflin and make sure that he knows that they're supportive of him.
You think it was just the fans sort of saying, hey,
absolutely,
you know, whatever's being written, we don't care about.
And it ended up working out quite well in that the first group went out altogether. The second group went out, I think something happened probably with his equipment. And so he ended up being the last guy on the ice by about 5-10 seconds. So everybody was, they had the guys.
Gearing him up.
Well, where's Bufflin? Where's Bufflin? Then he comes out and then everybody was cheering.
I thought they did a good job at the, you know, let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about what we saw at the Iceplex this morning and everything else.
I also want to talk later about the idea and the rumor that some have been making the rounds that Bufflin maybe moved to forward.
Yeah, that was been mentioned a couple times on Twitter. We'll cover all that and much, much more. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Sure, you don't shush me on radio.
I didn't shush you.
You shushed me.
I did not.
Richie, did Drew shush me?
That was a shush.
I swear I didn't shush.
I started talking. Drew goes, we're coming back. Don't shush me. Or you shush me.
You shush me. Okay, fine. I shushed you.
For those who watch Curb, you'll know what I'm talking about.
You probably ruined the episode for me, but you've been trying to do that for the past 4 days.
It's the best season ever.
It's a good season.
This last season of Curb, unbelievable. It's like, it was like the last season of Full House. Remember when
stop.
No, let him go.
Remember the time we played hockey with Dave Coulier, and it was on, was it your birthday?
My birthday.
It was Richard's birthday.
Richard's birthday.
My 19th birthday, yeah.
And Dave Coulier was playing at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Yeah.
And Drew, did you not go for a lunch with Dave Coulier?
I picked him up at the airport
You picked him up at the airport. What did you guys do after that?
It's a great story. I picked him up at the airport. He was in town for 3 days, and I picked him up at the airport, and he's literally here for 3 days, so I pick him up, and he's got like these two huge duffel bags. And I say, you know, you're here for 3 days. What's with the two huge bags? And he's like, you know, I brought my hockey equipment in case I can pick up a game while I'm here. And I said, perfect. We have a game tonight. And that's how it worked.
And that's how the Dave Coulier Classic started.
Of course. If you remember from Full House, Dave Coulier was a Red Wings fan.
Of course.
So we made our friend Neil take out his Red Wings jersey, which had never been worn. And we made Dave Coulier wear his Red Wings Eisman jersey that night when he played. Dave Coulier and Neil got in an argument over ice time.
You know what? Dave Coulier is a really good hockey player.
He played the...
He can skate backwards, Drew. I can't.
Yeah, no, he's a really good hockey player.
He played Junior A, Junior B, something like that?
Yeah, and he plays in
the LA
league.
King hockey league.
No, he didn't play Junior A. He played Joey Gladstone.
Yeah, that's right. Anyways, so down at the MTS Iceplex, Group C is probably now on the ice for the start of Jets training camp. You know, what jumped out at you in watching Group A this morning? Anything really, you know, jump out as being overwhelming? I mean, it's hard to tell.
Not really.
They're just watching drills more than anything.
Yeah, nothing really. I mean, you see what I spoke about earlier in the segment prior was there's a significant talent gap between the top and the bottom. And you know what? It's funny. You say, oh, well, there's some certain battles to be won. And there are battles to be won, really, on the third and fourth lines. Mm-hmm. And that's going to work itself out over the next little bit. But the top guys are the top guys. It's evident. The top defensemen are the top defensemen. And you watch one practice, and you can really tell that. You know, Andrew Ladd, if you want to talk about top players, Andrew Ladd, great player. Looked really sharp already. First practice, didn't seem to have missed a beat from his breakout season last season with Atlanta, scoring 30 goals. And you know what? I just thought that the cream rises to the top pretty quickly.
Yeah. You're right. And your best players should be your best players, especially there. But, you know, I thought Ladd probably looked one of the sharpest, as you'd expect. Is it incumbent on him to set the tone in that first practice, or is that just too much to expect?
That's a good point, Drew. I think it is, because you're the captain.
Yeah.
And it's the first practice, and you always want to impress. You want to impress the fans, but more importantly for the players, they want to impress the coaching staff. The coaching staff has not worked with them before, the significant players for the most part, the GMs and Shoveldev had Ladd in Chicago, mind you. But, you know, there's a bunch of scouts up there. There's Zinger, and then there's obviously the coaching staff. And these are guys who you're trying to make a good first impression on. You want to make them know, you want them to know that you should be the captain, and you want to set the tone. I think that's important.
Yeah, and I agree. And I mean, you know, in Group A, we had three of the biggest guys. We had Andrew Ladd, we had Zach Bogosian, and then we had Andrej Pavlik. And, you know, of course, he's setting the tone. I mean, this is the youngest team in the league. We'll probably say that a lot this year. And, you know, a guy like Zach Bogosian is 21 years old. And, you know, there's a lot of guys that were just drafted. Zach Ewan is not going to play in the NHL for a while now. He's only 18 years old. And that he's setting the tone for guys like that. And you know, Andrew Ladd is, you know, might want to be one of the younger captains in the league. I mean, I'm not talking about Taves or Crosby. Those guys are younger. But still, to be, you know, 26, 27 years old, and be the captain of a team is fairly young. But Ladd leads by example. He's very well respected. You know, the word you'll hear with Ladd, you know, again and again, is that his work ethic is great. He's talented. He can score. I mean, he's got underrated hands, great shot. And you know, the practice, even though, like we said in the first segment, the practice was, you know, a very much a light practice. There wasn't any systems, and you know, they weren't doing battle drills. It was all skating, passing, flow drills. You know, I thought it was a good practice. Zach Bogosian is a guy that, you know, I haven't ever seen play live. I've seen him play a lot on TV. That guy has unbelievable wheels, and you know, there's a reason why he was drafted third overall, and the Jets signed him to 2 years.
Let's talk about Zach Bogosian, because he signed his contract a couple days ago. I mean, two years, $5 million. You know, $2.5 million is the average annual salary cap. You know, we speculated it was going to happen before training camp, and they got right up to training camp. Is this a good contract for both sides?
I think so. I mean, when I wrote that article about it on the Legal Curve, I thought a 2-year deal would make sense for both sides, and I haven't changed that tune at all.
You're almost bang on, Richie.
And so I thought that, you know, I thought the Jets got a tad of value there. Kevin Cheveldayoff has done very well. You know, when we looked into the offseason, and I saw three big free agents for him to sign, right? Restricted free agents. It was Andrew Ladd, who had the most leverage of the bunch. Blake Wheeler had a little bit more leverage. And then, of course, Zach Bogosian. And I projected a certain amount of money, a range for all three. So before the show, I just decided to take the middle of the ranges of the three and compare them as to what Cheveldayoff signed them for. And it ended up being within $200,000 total. So I think he's done very well, you know, based on the value. I think Zach Bogosian, a 2-year deal, because what's what happens when you have a 2-year deal? Similar to kind of Eric Johnson in St. Louis, now with Colorado. They don't necessarily know what they have. Not only Atlanta, because apparently Atlanta was offering a little bit more money prior to the move.
Apparently Atlanta was offering him $4 million a year.
Yeah, $4 million a year. Maybe that's true, maybe that's not true. You know, that depends on term, Drew. If it's 4 or 5 years, then it's a different story.
Of course, if you're buying out some UFA years or whatever else.
Rick Dudley was giving out a lot of money to a lot of people there.
some of it not really considerate of...
Some of it was odd, but yeah. In any event, and you look at it and you say, okay, well, Zach Bogosian has to prove himself to the Jets. And Zach Bogosian, if he's, you know, there's in one sense, long-term deal gives him the security and the money, but probably less money. Mm-hmm. Short-term deal, less security, and he's not very good, he's not going to make much more money. So he's giving up the security of the long-term deal and more, you know, total cash. But the two-year deal, if he's confident in his ability and stays healthy, then he thinks, well, I'm going to make it up anyways because in 2 years I'm going to prove to them how good I am, and they're going to have to pay me. And if they can't pay me, they'll send me somewhere else where they can pay me. Well, I think that what he was paid was his market value, maybe just a little bit under it. I think Cheveldayoff did really well. And the truth is the talks weren't going to trickle into training camp because basically what Bob Murray did, Bogosian's agent, was he delayed it until camp started. But he never got in the way of camp starting. And with Bogosian, he was already here.
Yeah.
So Murray was just dragging on as long as he could to see how much he could get out of the Jets. Whatever he could get out of the Jets prior to the season starting, there he went. He doesn't have the same bargaining power. As we said before, Drew Doughty, guys. Drew Doughty's not playing in L.A., and Lombardi's going to take a hardball stance. Well, L.A.'s not going to the Stanley Cup Finals without Drew Doughty. The Jets aren't going anywhere anyways.
Yeah, so you're exactly right. You know, compare what Doughty signed, what Bogosian signed for with what Luke Shen just signed for with the Leafs. Yeah.
You can't compare it, though.
Is Shen that much more ahead of Bogosian?
Not at all, but I mean, he also gave up three more years of his of earnings. So he signed a five-year deal at 3.5 average?
Five-year deal at 3.6 average.
3.6 average, yeah. Okay? So $1 million more a year.
Yeah.
But 3 years down the road, you know, five, so he's what, 21?
Yeah.
Takes him to his 26th year. He'll have played, he'll be at UFA at the end of that contract.
Oh, yeah.
And he bought out, he's played 3 years in the NHL, right?
I believe so, yeah. He started when he was, 18, so yeah.
So 3 years, so that means if you, 3 years and you're at, it's a seven accrued years. So a four-year deal would have taken him to UFA. So they bought one UFA year out.
Right.
Now, I don't think Shen is as naturally talented as Bogosian. But I think, I didn't really like that contract for Toronto because I'm not sure they know what they have in him. And, I mean, at least they acted like they did. But yeah, he's played three seasons in the NHL. He's been very reliable, but he bought out a UFA year.
And once you buy out a UFA, it just brings up what you have to pay that much more.
Bogosian doesn't even have arbitration eligibility.
Right. But Shen wouldn't have arbitration eligibility either.
Right, but I'm saying in terms of in a couple of years, Bogosian will. So you're buying out those years of leverage.
Right. I understand what you're saying.
You know, Drew, on the topic of the Bogosian contract, even though that's what we were expecting the entire time, the terms and all that didn't come as a surprise. I guess the only thing that came as a surprise is that it took that long to get that contract done. The thing to me that's going to be interesting is what happens next year, Richie, with Evander Kane. Because Evander Kane is going to be in the exact same... He's not the exact same player as Bogosian, obviously. One's a forward, one's a defenseman. But Evander
contract-wise,
Kane... Contract-wise, he's going to be a pending... He's going to be an RFA.
Yeah.
Same age. 21 years old. And the thing is, they're going to be in a position with Kane. I just get the feeling, and, you know, I'm not a contract expert. Richie knows a lot more about this than I do. But I don't think you're going to see the types of contracts that you saw in Chicago. That's why I'm talking about Evander Kane, and I'll be interested to see, because Evander Kane, Richie, will probably be the first guy that they'll consider signing to that term. Obviously, Andrew Ladd signed for 5 years. Is it 4 years or 5 years?
Five years.
5 years. Yeah. But I'm talking about a guy who's 5 or 6 years younger.
Yeah.
And who's giving up UFA years. Mm-hmm. Andrew Ladd is not giving up any UFA years. He's already...
But will Kane have any arbitration eligibility next year?
No. Same situation right now as Bogosian. So Kane has been more productive than Bogosian, guys. And I think they know what they have in Kane more than they do in Bogosian. So I think Kane...
That's why you might see a five-year deal.
Especially with Bogosian, because if you asked... Yeah.
Maybe
most people would say he took a step back last year.
I don't necessarily think that's true. But I'll tell you right now...
Offensively, he took a step back. But defensively, we've talked about this. Did he take a step back? It was a bad team, and he ended up getting an increased role. So did he?
Exactly.
Like you said, Drew, it's not just about numbers.
Yeah,
he's minus 27 on a team that was
But we know what plus minus counts for.
Right? It means nothing. So, yeah. I mean, you look at a guy like Kane, you know what you're getting. He's getting better. He scored from 14 goals to 19 goals last year. He got, you know, he increases assist, doubles his assist total. He's a great offensive player. He's going to be a great offensive player. They'd probably be happy to invest 5 years in him.
Yeah.
It would be costly. But, you know, and that's what happens when you're paying a guy, you're buying out years of eligibility. I mean, if a player goes year by year by year, remember, if you qualify him, he can't make any less than he did the year prior.
Right, so you're going to be paying him anyways.
Right, so.
So, I mean, it's just...
He does 1 year deal. If he doesn't want the security of it, he does 1 year deal. He's going to always make more money.
Yeah, but, I mean, at some point...
Or minimum, never make less, so.
Right. But as a team, it's a risk-reward balance you have to keep in mind. But, I think they've done a pretty good job.
Bogosian is naturally the most talented player on the hockey team. I think people need to understand that.
And then Kane is probably second.
Yeah, naturally, exactly. These guys don't go 3 and 4 overall unless they are that good. Bogosian is, And Kane's a beautiful skater, too. Bogosian, yep. is for his size, skates beautifully, has a hard shot, he's physical, he's a beast. And if he is able to take the next step in terms of his development, the sky's the limit for a guy with the natural talent of Zach Bogosian. He's head and shoulders above the competition when it comes to natural talent. And I saw him on the ice today with all the other defensemen, and he's naturally the most talented of the defensemen on this team.
Let me ask before we go to break, actually, we're going to go to break. I'm going to leave you guys with this question to talk about on the other side. Should Dustin Byfuglien be a forward or a defenseman on this team?
I think he should be both.
Don't answer now. We're going to go to break.
Both.
When we come back, that's going to be the question we're going to discuss. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Afternoon, the start of Winnipeg Jets training camp earlier today at the MTS Iceplex, and of course they continue with practices all week long down at the MTS Center. Before we went to break, I'm going to pose the following question to Richard and Ezra, and we're trying to pull up the audio from our July 6th interview with Kevin Cheveldayoff when we asked him this question as well. Should Dustin Byfuglien, given the depth of defense on this team and what we have determined to be a lack of offensive, punch, should Dustin Byfuglien be a defenseman or a forward on this hockey team?
Drew, everyone knows that Dustin Byfuglien was a forward on the Chicago Blackhawks.
Right.
Last year was his first year on the Thrashers, and he was converted to a defenseman.
Right.
And he basically tore up the league in the first half and ended up leading all defensemen in goal scoring. But he is his pro career has been defined as him being a forward. And the way I look at this question, Richie asked Kevin Cheveldayoff that question. Hopefully we're going to play it in a few seconds. And then I asked Claude Noel the question at the NHL draft. And both times, we'll play the audio, but as far as Claude Noel goes, he didn't dismiss it. And me personally, I believe that he should play both. I don't think that the Jets have good enough defensive depth for him to play forward the entire season. But I basically think it should be a hybrid. I was talking to Richie about this yesterday because we wanted to bring it up on the show today. I think that Dustin Byfuglien should be a Matthew Dandino type of rover where he's used in different situations, half on defense, half on forward. The problem with that, Richie, is that if you're using him as a rover, if you want to call it that, half defenseman, half forward, there's line combination problems, and whose spot is he taking? Byfuglien's not the fastest skater. He's not going to be on the top line. You're most likely putting him on the second line sometimes, but mainly the third line. But the problem is he's very good on the point on the power play, so you're going to want to use him on there. So, I mean, you have to pick one or the other, but he one thing you can't deny is that he's valuable on both forward and defense.
See, to me, you can't make him a forward because he's making $5.2 million a year, and is he a $5.2 million forward? That's one thing. Is he?
But let's that aside. Don't.
That has to factor in. Unfortunately,
the contract's there. I mean, it's not going anywhere.
But just how you're going to allot your money, I think, is a factor.
Well, but
let me ask you this: is he more of a $5.2 million defenseman or $5.2 million forward?
Neither.
Doesn't that have to factor in?
Yeah, it should factor.
He's more of a $5.2 million defenseman to me.
It's worth noting that he prefers to play defense.
Okay, that's good. That's important too. Second of all, is the replacement player at defense? Is the value of defense that you're going to replace him with greater or worse than the value he's giving you at forward? So as you mentioned, where are you going to play?
Meaning, if you have to take him off, you take him off defense, you have to replace him with somebody. If you look down at the roster,
Randy Jones,
Derek Mitchell.
Randy Jones.
It's probably Randy Jones.
Randy Jones.
So is playing Randy Jones as one of your regular defensemen worth moving Dustin Byfuglien up to forward? That's pretty much how the question breaks down.
And the question is, where does he play at forward?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right now, Blake Wheeler's your number one right winger.
Yeah.
Okay, you probably want to give him top 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Top 2 line minutes is what I mean. Eric Fehr, you likely got him to give you top 2 minutes when he's healthy.
Right. And you don't want to be bumping Eric Fehr because offensively at the forward position, he's better than Byfuglien.
Well, the value, basically, is Eric Fehr better offensively? Is he Eric Fehr better value offensively than Randy Jones? There's lots of factors to go. Yeah. Put it to you this way.
You can't look at the question in a vacuum.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
You have to look at how it affects everything else going down.
Guys,
the line.
Third line minutes. You're not going to put Fehr. You don't want Fehr. The reason you got Fehr is to play him second line.
Yeah.
Wheeler, same thing. Those guys both shoot right and play right wing. Is one of them going to be a third liner? Because if one of them's a third liner,
well, if one of them's a third liner, that's not a bad problem
to have. You're taking more offense away. In total.
You'd rather have Fair as a second line right winger when he's healthy and Bufflin as a defenseman than Bufflin as a second line right winger, Fair as a third liner, Randy Jones in the lineup. That's how I see it. Their roster's not constructed in such a way that it's is a realistic possibility, not possibility, but a realistic move right now. I just don't see how that works.
You know what I think is realistic? I think it's realistic to expect Dustin Bufflin to remain a defenseman and for him to be used maybe in special situations as forward, but rarely. And
on the point is different. But let me ask you, Ezzy, I'm going to get in there. Let me ask you this. If you move Bufflin to forward, your top defense unit is arguably Bogosian and Enstrom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then what?
Well, then you're looking.
You're looking at Hainsey.
Yeah. And Oduya.
And Oduya.
Yeah.
And Stewart and Jones. So all three are left-handed shots. Yeah. Four are left-handed shots, excuse me.
Yeah.
You're going to probably play Hainsey with somebody like Stewart and Oduya with somebody like Jones, something like that. Oduya's a better skater.
Your defense too thin by moving Bufflin up.
Oduya and Hainsey are better skaters than Stewart and Jones. You're probably going to want to pair them up in that way.
Right.
Exactly. So I just don't. Now look at your defense that way. It goes from a. Put it to you this way. Right now your defense is a strength, is it not?
Undoubtedly.
If you move Bufflin to offense, unless there's some kind of trade or signing or whatever, not signing, trade.
Of course, but.
If you move Bufflin to forward, is your defense a strength anymore?
No, your defense is middling to poor.
Not as strong.
After you get past Enstrom and Bogosian, your defense is an Achilles heel.
There's some talent there, but yes, it likely would be a weakness. Okay? Or, middle tier of the NHL, but bottom part of the middle tier. Now, what about the forwards? Are your forwards suddenly a strength?
No, they're just... you're just moving a... You're replacing one problem with another. I mean, I think that you're probably right in that you keep your defense as your strength and you build out. I mean, you build out
easier
that way.
Easier to get forwards than it is defensemen, too.
That's right. And, I mean, I think you have more... And you have more depth, certainly, on forward in terms of young guys who could potentially step up.
And you want to keep him happy. I mean, if he wants to play defense, he's at the beginning of a $5.2 million deal for, 5 years at 5.2. It's a big problem to have.
And, Richie, on the topic of Bufflin in his year last year, he struggled in the second half. Dustin Bufflin, let's be honest, he exceeded expectations. He had a career year last year, and his first half almost was a double-edged sword. And then people expected him to score 80 points. People were talking about him winning the Norris Trophy. I mean, Dustin Bufflin's a very good hockey player, but he's not in the Norris conversation as far as I'm concerned. His strength
offensively,
is
physical. Not defensively.
Offensively, he's very talented, obviously. That's his strength. But they're expecting him to be the physical crash and banger, but they're expecting him to get a lot of points in the power play, and that's what he did last year. But I don't think people, I think people are maybe unclear about what his strengths are. When the Chicago Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup, his strength was all physicality, standing in front of the net, cycling the puck down
right.
low.
That's right.
So,
he played forward for the Blackhawks because the Blackhawks had a ton of depth on defense during that run. I mean, that's what...
Yeah, you're 100% right.
They had a strength on defense. They said, look, this guy creates mismatches up front.
Yes.
We can use him in that role without hurting ourselves on
and
the back
Drew,
end.
That's why I want to see if Claude Noel uses Bufflin in front of the net on the power play in addition to that, like the Chris Pronger.
Why, no, he's better on the point.
No, I'm just saying, I'm not saying like the,
if they put him
in front of the net every shift, but I'm just saying that, you mentioned the Vancouver series, they could not move
the guy.
Doesn't
matter. They take him off the point on defense on the power play. Who's your number two, pairing?
Then you get Bogosian more power play time.
Fine, you get Bogosian and you get Enstrom.
Hainsey can play power play too.
Would you rather have Bufflin on the point in the power play? Or would you rather have the guys you're replacing with? Same question.
No, I'm with you, Drew. I'm just saying there are some options on the power play, but I'm with you. Bogosian needs to get some more power play time though this year.
Richie, I wasn't suggesting.
I don't think anybody's going to think that Bogosian won't get more power play time.
Yeah.
But I don't think that taking Bufflin off the point, especially,
once in a while to change
able to get his shot through.
Once in
for
a
the
while to change the look.
That's what I was suggesting.
Exactly.
Once in a while to change the look.
So you have a team that's planning for what you give them, which is Bufflin on the point. You say, hey, we practice it. Bufflin up front, Bogosian at the point. Gives a different
they
look.
They do that with Chara and
maybe
Boston.
Maybe it takes them two periods to adjust. They adjust, you go back.
And Chara, you actually drew. Bufflin, you can't move. Chara, you actually can't move. He's 6'9", and you actually can't move him, but that's the same point. But the Jets' strength is going to be defense and the power play, and their penalty killing is going to have to get better. They're going to struggle to score goals, especially on their third and fourth lines. But I think this year, like we've said time and time again, it's all about growth. There's so much room. I get excited, you know, as you know, a member of the radio show and as a fan and everything, just to think about, like, these guys, Evander Kane, Zach Bogosian, these are top five draft picks, young guys that are really, they really have such long careers ahead of them, and we're going to get to watch them develop, and people just have to be, you know, cognizant of the fact that, you know, they're not going to each get 100 points this year. They're not Sidney Crosby, right, but they're really good.
Yeah, I'd be if any of the players get 60 points this year.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Ladd didn't. I don't think he cracked 60 points last year.
He didn't get the ice time.
30 goals and 29 assists, I think.
Yeah, he was close, but I mean, it's not realistic to expect that these guys, as we've said from all along, are all going to have career years and tear it up. Nor would you really necessarily want them to, because otherwise you got to start paying them all at the same time. So as opposed to spacing it out. Let's talk about Tobias Enstrom for a couple minutes. Probably he was the best defenseman on the team last year, and nobody talks about him.
You know, very underrated.
I'm
not just saying that because we're in Winnipeg. He's Richie. I got to give Richie credit, and I've said this on the show before. You know, he came into the league in Atlanta, and Richie picked, I think, Enstrom in a hockey pool, and I was like, who is this guy? And I think he's played every single game. He missed a little bit of time last year, but his first 3 or 4 years, I think he played all 82 games. I guess we'll check that. But the guy is unbelievably talented, such a smooth skater. And,
yeah, you're right. 82, 82, 82, 72.
Yeah,
he missed 10 games in 4 years.
Last year he missed a little time. But the guy last year in Atlanta was absolutely on fire. The guy, you know what Tobias Enstrom reminds me of a little bit of, Richie?
Who?
Phil Housley.
Smaller left-handed shooting player, yeah.
Smaller, but the way his skating is, you could argue, is a little bit better than Housley's, but the way he...
Housley was pretty smooth.
The way he passes the puck, I mean, I think the guy's going to get 50 assists again this year, whatever he got last year.
41 assists last year in 72 games, so if he plays the whole season,
40-50, something like that.
Did you notice him, if this training camp roster that we got today was right, and he was on in Group A, did you notice him in Group A?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
I thought
small guy, Drew, but people don't realize that he's only about 5'11", I think.
At most.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't notice him. He wasn't one of the top guys I was looking for. But the fact I didn't notice him,
were looking in the Timbits box.
Oh, that's right. He wasn't a Timbit. That was
my
problem.
Did we bring that Timbits box, or is it still at the Iceplex?
I think Remus donated it to Nice Family.
I don't know what happened to those Timbits.
Oh, I threw it out, actually.
Did you?
I'm trying to cut back. I'm trying to eat more healthy. No cheese on my burgers.
Trying to cut down to 40% body fat? Is that what you're aiming?
Yep.
In terms of Enstrom, though, Drew, he has you know, tremendous skills, tremendous vision. He doesn't very strong, though, and he doesn't have great length, and he's not tall. So he does have problems with guys get position on him. That's very important for him to be able to keep his angles and his positioning, because if guys get a half a step on him, even a quarter of a step,
they can body him out.
Exactly. And I noticed that at practice today.
You notice that guys were bodying him out?
If they cut the edge there, if they cut the corner, they were bodying
him out.
And that's
why, like,
and he couldn't get there. And you know, he had 54 penalty minutes last year. I'm not sure how many of those are minors. I'm assuming all, because he's not a fighter.
Right.
You know, he's consistently had about 40 penalty minutes a year. I'm assuming, and I don't know this firsthand, assuming a lot of those penalties are from him losing half a step and then having to chase it without the length of the stick and the strength, he has to sometimes grab a guy down.
Sure, makes perfect sense. Before we go to break, you can always follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. The website is www.IllegalCurve.com. And in case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Download it, subscribe to it, get it sent to you each and every week. When we come back, we're going to talk about what happened in Penticton at Jets Rookie Camp. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Drew, what would you like to muse about right now?
Very good. I'm going to muse about the fact it's 10 minutes to 1 o'clock. Coming up at the top of the hour, the color analyst for Winnipeg Jets Radio here on Sports Radio 1290. He's Shane Knighty. He's going to join us on the line.
From Neepawa, Manitoba.
Exactly right. Stanley Cup champion Shane Knighty. I apologize. I should always mention that. And then throughout this next hour, between the 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock hour, we're going to bring you some of the audio that we took from the MTS Iceplex earlier today. Remus is down there. I think he's on his way over here now, but we have some of the audio going to be available, so we'll play some of those interviews from earlier today with Zach Bogosian, Andre Pavlich, and Chris Thorburn. We got some audio and some more audio coming throughout the rest of the program, so you'll have that to listen to. Roy McGregor from the Globe and Mail, he's stationed here for the next few weeks. He's going to join us at 1:30.
At the Iceplex, Drew, you were talking to him. I think a little bit too much, but just kidding. But he's a fantastic writer. We all know that he's written books, and it's a pleasure. I think we've tried to get him on before, but obviously he's in Toronto and busy. But
Ottawa normally,
good times. Ottawa, sorry.
He's going to be here.
You lived in Ottawa, didn't you?
That's what I spoke to him about. Yeah. In fact, earlier today.
Right. I lived in Ottawa for many years.
I don't sound like that. That's the problem when you do that impersonation.
First off, you do sound like that when you're. No, I'm just kidding. But the Drew impression's great because Richie brought it out on Drew's surprise 30th birthday, and it was unbelievable.
My brother did too.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's because we love you, Drew. But very excited for our guest coming up. As well, we have Zachary Eichmann coming on, a doctor. Who's going to, basically explain the science behind these concussions that have been going on. So
exactly right. That's coming up at 2:30.
Don't forget Kalen as well.
Don't worry. We've got a busy 3 hours. We've got a busy 2 hours and 10 minutes left. Let's talk about rookie camp and the prospects tournament out in Penticton. Is it just a matter of everybody cannot get enough hockey, and that's why we're spending so much time talking about rookie and prospects camp?
Yeah.
Anything you can... Can you gain anything from it?
Sure, you can get a better understanding, but it's more so for the teams than it is for the fans.
Right.
The fans don't even know half these players, more than half these players. They're playing, and they don't understand the context of the games. Mark Scheifele played well. We're going to ask Shane Natty what he thought of Mark Scheifele, and Mark Scheifele was out there today in the second group. Yep. But Mark Scheifele scoring against San Jose, against prospects that may never even crack the NHL, just take it in stride here,
guys. Take it with a grain of salt.
I'd like to see how he does in the World Juniors against guys who are more of his talent level and the competition. Moreover, a guy like Jason Gregoire, who Kyle Kozier, our scouting correspondent, really likes. He was on the ice today from the second group, too, I believe. Solid, shoots left, solid, maybe a third-line winger who can kind of do the little things and is mature in his game. Ezzy, what we're looking at? We're looking at Jason Gregoire playing against an 18-year-old out of Rusetta Junior.
He's 22.
He's got 4 years on him. He said it. He said, I'm older than these guys. I should be more mature in that. And so you're not comparing apples to apples. You got a mixed bag of fruit on the ice.
And Richie.
And it's hard to take it.
And you can even put it like this. The way Mark Scheifele and Jason Gregoire play, I'm not sure if they're going to be on the split squad team that'll play Columbus on Tuesday at the MTS Center. If Jason Gregoire and Mark Scheifele, complete a tic-tac-toe pass and Mark Scheifele rips it top corner, that's going to impress Claude Noel, Charlie Huddy, Kevin Cheveldayoff a lot more than him scoring on Tyler Bunns or somebody like that. By the way, he didn't score on Tyler Bunns. That's the only goalie I can remember from the rookie tournament.
I just have to interrupt this. This is probably the best tweet I've ever read in my life.
Not good, Drew.
At the Glenn Miner just tweeted at Remus saying, at M. Remus needs to be careful around the at NHL Jets locker room. He looks like the type that the jocks used to dunk in the toilet.
Remus, I really hope Remus is listening to that on his way here. We'll have to tell him that. That's a great
tweet. He's the one who informed me about it. He retweeted it.
Remus has been doing an unbelievable job. He, as everyone knows, he's kind of the social media, guru for our show. And you know what? He's getting a little bit of a reputation for himself out there. He's been at almost every press conference. Everyone remembers at the jersey unveiling. People were watching the jersey unveiling on TV, and they could see Remus kind of walking around. He's a character, and
Remus
does a great job.
Remus is so proficient on the BlackBerry and on other on the internet and with computers that when you talk to him, he just tweets your conversation.
Yeah.
So like if I'm talking to Remus about going to Tim Hortons or grab a coffee,
are you transcribing my interview, Remus?
He tweets. He tweets that. He's like, Richard wants to get a coffee. Tweets.
Nice.
Yeah, you don't tweet about that.
You don't tweet about that.
Leave that stuff for Facebook.
Of the prospects that were in Penticton,
yes.
Who do you think did the best for themselves? Or do you just think it's too soon to say anything?
Can I jump in here?
Sure. I'm asking both of you.
This is going to surprise you a little bit, but for me, it was Zach Ewan. When me, Remus, and Kyle were at the draft, we rode on a bus to the draft and back from the hotel we were staying at, and Zach Ewan and his family were there for both times. And I didn't know who he was at the time, but after he was drafted, he was wearing that black NHL jersey, so I knew who he was. But to me, that guy impressed me the most, just from a, I guess, perspective of how he looked on the ice. Scheifele and Gregoire, I would say, were the best offensive players. Levko Kopper, too. But Zach Ewan, I think you can see that he's years away. He might end up going to play college hockey. I'm not sure what his plans are or what the Jets would like for his development.
He was in the dub last year, as I believe.
Yep, he was in the dub. So
if you play in the dub, you can't play college. So you're going to stay in the dub another year.
You can't play U.S. college. You can't play Canadian college. But
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Nobody's going to be playing Canadian college if you're playing in the dub.
He might.
And you hope to play in the NHL.
So hope you're going to play in the Canadian college?
Calgary? University of Alberta.
Alberta.
But Ewan, I think, is going to play a year, maybe two more years in the dub, and then might play, go to the NHL. But I thought
I agree with that.
I thought he looked really good. He's a tall guy who's got to put some weight on, but he was a guy that I think they got him in the fourth or fifth round.
I thought he was seventh.
Or third.
No.
Third, fourth, or fifth.
Zach Ewan was, I believe, one of their two third-round picks. The other one was Lowry, I believe. And Ewan was supposed to be a second-round
pick. Lowry was for sure. Serville, I think, was the third.
Oh, that's right. So
he might have been fourth.
Fourth-rounder. That's right.
That's what I said.
And he was supposed to be a second-rounder by projections, and he fell quite a bit, and people were, had some questions about him. But there's certainly a talent base there that merited him being a little bit higher up on the charts. So.
He looks like a guy that's just got good vision on the ice, and he looks like he has room for growth. And I think that's something that fans should maybe be looking at a little bit more so than, who gets all the goals. Because really, these tournaments, don't mean that much. And the players themselves will tell you that.
Another thing, I mean, you have guys playing together who have never played together before. There's a chemistry issue. There's no real systems in place because these guys, don't get that much coaching from Keith McCambridge and company.
Prior to the tournament.
Yeah, of course. So I mean, there's no systems really in place, and there are systems, but they're basic.
Yep.
You're putting a bunch of guys together who played in way different, different environments, right? So the college hockey, there's still a lot of clutching and grabbing, especially in the WCHA. Yeah, and then you have the WHL, you have the OHL, the QMJHL has changed quite a bit over the past couple of years, not as just crazy open fire as it used to be, but you're throwing all these guys together, different ages, different backgrounds, to read into the production. At any real level, it is, to me, is, and never mind the small sample size that you're dealing with, it's, there's a lot more to it than what you see. And I'll tell you one thing, the evaluators in terms of Bruce Southern, Jimmy Roy, Kevin Cheveldayoff, and all the guys, Marcel Comeau, right, I believe is the name.
Yeah, yeah.
What you're dealing with is they'll tell you that a 10-game run in the players' respective leagues this year says a lot more about the progression, even a 5-game run, than do 3 games in an odd environment when you're just putting everybody together.
You have to see them play against the players that, they have to see them playing against the, top level. Imagine, they're not going to, if they make the NHL, they're not going to be playing against other 18-year-olds. It's not a fair comparison to see how they play when, they're playing, it's boys amongst men.
Right, you are.
Now, there are some boys, quote-unquote, who can perform up against the men. Jeff Skinner did it last year.
Yes.
But those are few and far between, for the most part.
50 goal scorers in junior.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, the boys need more time to mature until they become the men. And that's, it's no slight against them. It's just the way it is. It's much more like, hockey is much more like baseball in terms of development than it is basketball or football, where they can step right in and...
Well, it's the age factor.
Yeah, well, but I mean, 18-year-old basketball players go out and then often, perform to the level...
Now there's a cap, so they have to be a year...
Fine, 19-year-olds, but whatever.
As far as the first season of the Jets goes, Drew, it's very likely that no 18-year-olds are going to play in the NHL this year, and the only guy that will even get any consideration has to be Scheifele, and it's quite likely... He's not going to spend a significant amount of time here. I really think they're doing an absolutely fantastic job. Kudos to Keith McCambridge for the job he did. I thought he did a great job. They were 2-1. I thought it was a really nice touch that he was the head coach and he ran all the practices and the drills.
Well, because he's going to be the guy who sees these guys first and foremost.
Exactly.
For the most part, they're not going to be up to Claude Noel and the Jets for another couple years.
It's also a good idea to have Claude Noel see from afar and take a different perspective.
That's right. You don't want to be take a step back and you can see the forest through the trees. Right?
That's right, Drew.
Good.
Drew analogy? The philosopher.
Yeah, exactly. Let's head to commercial break. When we come back on the other side, Shane Knighty is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. One hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. My name is Drew Mindell, joined in studio with my good friends Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for the first time. You know him as the color analyst on Sports Radio 1290. He's a Stanley Cup champion. Shane Knighty, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be here.
Pleasure to have you on. Thanks for joining us this morning, Shane. We want to start with the rookie tournament out in Penticton. You were there. You saw all 3 games. What jumped out at you in terms of who made a real impact that you saw on the ice?
Well, you know what? It's such a great evaluating tool to have those tournaments. You know, and right away, Mark Scheifele really stepped out. He came out that first game with a lot, you know, tons of pressure and expectations. And to come out and get a goal and assist in his first game, certainly he was the guy people were focused on. And, you know, he delivered. He played on line with Jason Grégoire, the native from Winnipeg, who also had a strong showing throughout the tournament.
You know, Shane, you had a really illustrious career, and you went through a lot of different training camps. Maybe could you juxtapose being a professional and what you're looking to accomplish in the first few days of training camp versus a rookie like Mark Scheifele and what he's trying to accomplish in his first few days of training camp?
Well, as a veteran, when you're a veteran player coming back, you're just trying to get in the groove of thing. You know, Mark Scheifele, those kids that usually have been through a lot more already at this point. Like, they've had either junior camps, they've had, a lot of teams have summer development camps already. So they've been on the ice a bit, and the veterans come back, they're just trying to find their groove in these first couple of days, you know, get the rust out of the gloves, out of the legs, and kind of find their groove again. So a lot of times people, you can't look too early in and say, oh, it looks like they're, a veteran. No, they didn't look like they're going hard. Well, it's the rookies that have come out hard. Right now it's been a great pace in these early practices, though.
Shane, Zach Bogosian signed this week 2 years, $5 million total. Right-handed shooting defenseman like yourself, what do you see as the things that Zach needs to do to take the next step? Because we know, physically he has all the tools. You see him skate, shoot, hit, and all of that. But what does he have to do to take the next step from maybe the mid-level to the top level of NHL defenseman?
Well, Zach's a special player. He's one of those young guys that's really kind of the future of this franchise. I watched him here skate today, and his skating ability alone for a big guy, he's 6'3", mm-hmm. 215, 220, and the way he moves is outstanding.
Yep.
I was just talking about the group of guys here, and even with the St. John's Ice Caps, Keith McCambridge, we just had a discussion, and we're both blown away by the way he can move. He plays physical. He's got a great shot. And like you said, he does. He has the skill set. He has the ability, but he's 21. Defense tends to be a position that, you know what, guys really don't learn it and perfect it till you're, 25 years old, 24 years old. It takes time. But there are the exceptions, the Drew Doughtys and other players like that.
Right.
I don't know if he's at that caliber, but he has potential to be one of those really solid young defensemen like a Tyler Myers, a Drew Doughty. He's coming up in that path, and the fact that he has someone like Charlie Huddy who will be working with him day in and day out is another great asset for the Jets to have, because Charlie's going to be patient, they're going to work with him, and they're going to push him. They want him to evaluate his game, and once he does that, he's got to build confidence, because confidence is going to be the key for him. Mm-hmm. He knows he struggled last year. He's made that statement. He's looked it in the face. He knows he needs to get his confidence back, come in. I think he's just like everyone else. He's thrilled to come this year and play in a hockey market. And, him building his confidence, coming out and having a great start is going to be key for a good season.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Shane Knighty. Shane, you mentioned that it takes longer for defensemen to develop and sort of reach their full potential. What is it about the position that makes it that sort of the learning curve be that a little extra longer than it is for a forward or a goaltender?
Well, it's mental. You really have to know the game. You have to adjust to the speed. And it's just learning tendencies. You have to learn tendencies of the other players. You have to know what they're going to do. You got to play certain guys different ways. And there is a speed factor. Like it took me a long time. And I think that's why in my 30s, I was able to adjust and probably have some of my better years, even though I didn't have close to the skills that a lot of, like, especially someone like Zach Bogosian, I didn't move or skate or anything near like him, but it's playing the angles, knowing the right time to go in at a guy, knowing kind of playing percentages, and all that comes with learning. And that's what I said is a guy with the, invaluable experience like Charlie Huddy is a great coach for him to have to work with.
We wanted to ask you quickly about Dustin Byfuglien. We were talking about this in the first hour of the show, the possibility of Dustin Byfuglien moving to forward. What do you think of that that question?
I don't see it. I think, he really elevated his game last year playing in the defense position. And he's such a big body back there. He's a guy, you know, he's going to be tough in the corners. How are you going to get around somebody who weighs and is big and as strong as he is? And then his shot from the point, you know, he brings a lot of more tools back there. He understands the game. And he said he likes to be back on defense. He likes to see the play develop. And because he did play forward, he's really good at jumping in the play. He picks the opportune times to find the holes and to create offensive chances for the team. So, you know, I don't really see any benefit in him moving up. He's, you know, established himself as an all-star defenseman now. That's where you want him to play.
Shane, you've played defense in the NHL for a long time, and you just recently retired. When you were playing against Atlanta, you played in the Eastern Conference. When you were playing against Atlanta, was there anything that stood out about the team in general? Any one player that you thought, oh, you know, he's better than maybe I originally had thought?
Well, actually, it's funny you mentioned that. My first game last year, which was in April when I first returned from my injury, was against Atlanta. You know, they went through a rough patch now last year. They kind of, as a team, it's just like anything, you know, you can get on a roll one way and you can go downhill one way just as easily. It seems the snowball effect. And they were, you know, on their downside. But the thing that stands out with me at this club is their young talent. And like you said, I'm going to say Zach Bogosian again. And I'm going to say Brian Little. And I'm going to say Vander Kane. These guys have tremendous skill. And you really need them to step their games up. And they really need to break out this year. And then, you know, you sprinkle around with Tobias Enstrom, which everybody's going to see how good this guy is. He's small, but he's one of those guys who plays the game almost effortlessly because he's so skilled. He understands his first passes. He might be one of the best passers in the league for breaking out and that transition from defense to offense. And, you know, you got Dustin Byfuglien, and you got some veteran guys like Andrew Ladd that have won the Stanley Cup. And if they can bring that winning attitude, you know, it's going to be interesting. I'm excited to see these guys play the game. They are a young team, but they're in a hockey market that's full of excitement and energy. And if they can feed off that and find a consistent hockey game where they're competing every night, I like the way the team will look.
As Richard just mentioned, you retired this past season, and if I'm correct, I believe that you retired for the chance to work with the Illegal Curve crew.
Something like that.
We wanted to talk to you about last year. You won the Stanley Cup with the Boston Bruins. What was it like to bring the Stanley Cup back to your hometown?
Well, you know, it's a dream come true. There's no question. You first dream as a little boy of making the NHL, but you know, how many times growing up were you playing, you know, for us playing on the streets or going on the rink and playing shinny, and what are you playing for? Well, you're playing for the Stanley Cup, whether it's real or not, and to actually make that dream come true and to bring that to my hometown where I dreamt about doing it. It was just, you know, it was a magical day. You know, it went by quick, but it was great to see the expression on, you know, kids' faces, people's faces, just to see the Stanley Cup, to bring it to my hometown of Mequa, you know, my family, to share that special moment with them. You know, it truly was a special day and one that will, you know, live on always in memory. Everything, there's so many great memories from, you know, winning it to everything, and just the chance to bring it home capped everything off.
Shane, I'm going to have one final question for you, and you know, if you don't want to answer it, that's fine also. You know, right before, you know, I'm sure that throughout your career you've had offers from, you know, various sources, and you know, the KHL I think came calling right before you decided to join us here on Sports Radio 1290. Did, you know, in light of the tragedy that occurred with Lokomotiv Yaroslavl, did that factor in the travel factor into your decision making at all?
Yeah, no question. I'm not a good flyer to begin with, and it is something that has come up when you talk to others who've been there, and it's been documented now since this terrible tragedy that, you know what, it was something that was known but kind of just put to the side by people. It's like, oh yeah, that's the way it is, and it's unfortunate that it takes a tragedy like this to actually really address the problem. You know, for me, it was something I thought about, but how seriously I thought about going over there, it just never felt right for me. And it was. I was told, you know, the flights can be shady at times. There's no question. The plane, But at the same time, it's you know, they really need to address this problem, get it under control. And it's awful. It's terrible. You know, I lost former teammates and kind of a mentor as a defensive coach in Brad McCrimmon. You'll never find a better man. You know, love the game, love this family, and you'll be sorely missed.
Shane Knighty, you're going to hear him all season long as the voice, the analyst here on the Sports Radio 1290. Shane Knighty, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime, guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks Shane. Take care.
Thanks, Shane.
Let's head to commercial break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to play some of the audio we've collected from our day down at the MTS Iceplex. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Were you just acting as your own electric guitar there, Richard?
No, just getting my mic ready to go here, Drew.
Drew's going to Pearl Jam tonight.
Drew's rocking at Pearl Jam, Yellow Ledbetter.
Drew's putting on his Pearl Jam Go t-shirt and rocking out to Crazy Mary.
I am actually not going to Pearl Jam tonight.
Crazy Mary.
That's good. Are you guys?
It's going to be a fantastic concert. I've seen them twice.
Are you going
Fargo
as?
In Montreal.
Are you going as?
Nope. I've already seen them twice.
It's enough.
I don't understand why people go to see the same band like five times.
I thought you followed around Britney Spears on our tour.
You're trying to throw Timmy under the bus. He went to Arctic Monkeys like three times.
No, I'm not excluding Tim. Everyone
Timmy,
else.
Take the mic.
I'm actually going to see them two more times at the end of this month.
So as he has a beef with you too?
I thought I'm going with you. Is it sold out? I'll go with you.
No, it's not sold out yet. You can still get Balcony.
We've already established a concert relationship. Me and you went to the Black Keys together. It was fantastic.
Right. Great concert.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That was our weekly music segment.
Yep.
Drew hasn't listened to a CD. He actually only listens to his old Police tape.
Drew, aren't you a big Paul Anka fan?
That was the.
Did you use that joke last week?
I used that joke last week. It's actually Perry Como.
Perry Como.
What about Rivers Cuomo? Lead singer of Weezer.
Oh, well done.
Nicely. Did not know that.
Are they related?
I don't think so.
The first names are related?
Yeah, I don't think so. Anyways, as we've mentioned throughout the program...
Hold on, Drew. One second. How old were you when you met Buddy Holly?
Well played, Ezzy. Well played.
I actually have had that one in my repertoire. People don't know that I have a stash of jokes. This is what I do on the weekend. I actually just write down jokes and I cross them off every week. Finally got around to that Buddy Holly joke. Well, I only have, I think, 31,000 more jokes to bring up on the air.
25,000 of them include Buddy Holly. There's variations of that joke.
Excellent work, guys. You should be very proud of yourselves. Welcome back. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we were down at MTS Iceplex prior to coming on air this morning. Remus is still down there gathering up some audio, and I think he's on his way here. I'm not even 100% sure where he is.
And where is he?
I think he's gathering up the audio of the Group B that's coming off the ice.
Oh, okay, good.
So he got some Group A, and as part of Group A, Zach Bogosian was there. Why don't we play the audio of Zach Bogosian during the scrum from after practice this morning?
Is there a lot of pressure among the players right now? There seems to be a lot of excitement.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Not used to practicing in front of a crowd like that, but, it's great. The fans are excited. We're excited, and, you know, it's a good day today in Winnipeg.
Did you believe that the fans would be this hyped to see you?
Yeah, I mean, when I landed here on Sunday, there was a lot of hype going around. I mean, it's a great turnout out here. The fans really showing some support, so, it feels good to practice in front of them and, you know, kind of give them a little bit of a show of what we're about this year.
We're still in Atlanta. What would this day be like?
We had some good turnouts there the first day of training camp, but I don't think it would be anything like this.
There's no comparison then?
No. It's there's a lot of people here, and just when they're screaming "Go Jets, go!" it kind of gives you a little bit of goosebumps just hearing it, and it's real exciting.
How much rust is there to scrape off?
Well, I think the first day of camp, everyone's skating real hard, so the ice gets chewed up pretty much. So. You just try to, keep things simple out there. And, it is the first day at camp, so it's going to be a little rusty. But, we got to sharpen up here. We got a big game on Tuesday, so we got to, sharpen up here.
Big relief, Zach, that you got the contract out of the way, because there's a couple of guys in the league right now that are not in camp because of that reason.
Yeah, it's definitely something I didn't want to do. I didn't want to wait until, I didn't want to be without the team. So, I can't really comment on what they're doing, but I'm just happy that mine got done, and I'm glad to be here.
There's been a lot of talk about concussions,
there's a big research conference going on in Toronto right now. Has there been a change in awareness about concussions among players in the NHL?
Yeah, last night we had a meeting and there was a 10-minute video of a couple of rule changes, just, you know, blindside hits and stuff like that. So, you know, we're all aware of what's going on. And, you know, that being said, it is a fast game and a lot of things happen quick. But, you know, we have to realize as players that, you know, we have to be smart and aware out there of what's going on.
So there's a fine balance, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, anytime, like I said, it's a fast game, so things happen quick. But the more people are aware of the rule changes and the videos like that, it just, you know, it can't hurt us any, so...
Sidney Crosby is skating this hour. Do the guys talk about a little bit of a surprise about how long he's been out?
No, I mean, anytime you deal with an injury like that, you don't want to rush things back. And, you know, there's been people, you know, that have been football players that have had concussions and now they're laying in a hospital bed because they can't really talk. So you have to really take that into account and be smart about it. And, you know, whether he's... you know, coming back in a week or 6 months from now, you have to respect it. And, you know, anytime you're dealing with someone, especially a head injury, you know, you have to take your time.
What do you think it'll mean to the game that he's back? Possibly?
Well, he's the face of the NHL, so I think it's good he's back. You know, anywhere he plays, he draws a big crowd. So, you know, he's a great player. He's exciting to watch, and he's fun to play against. So, you know, it's glad to see that he's back on the ice healthy.
What are your first impressions on the way Noel wins practice?
Yeah, there's a lot of one-on-ones today, so it was a little tough on the defense, but, you know, we had a quick 10-minute meeting before practice, just letting everyone know what's going on for practice and what he expects. So, you know, as far as that goes, he was really organized, so it was, you know, it was a good practice out there.
Last week, some of the guys said you're the best athlete on the team. Would you agree with that, and who did you say is the best athlete on the team?
I don't know. I don't know if that's, I think Brian Little said that, but you know, it's great that they said that, but I don't know. There's a lot of good athletes on the team. I'm not just the only one.
What's the biggest challenge facing this defense? I guess this is a group that gave up the second most goals in the NHL this year. When is the biggest challenge going forward this season?
I think there's a lot of good skating defensemen in back there and a lot of offensive guys, and you know, the more as we play as a five-man unit and or a six-man unit, including the goalie, it's only going to help. But I think just, you know, working under Claude, I think it's going to help us out a lot. Just with a new atmosphere, a new, obviously a new city, a new atmosphere and everything like that, I think it'll help us. And, you know, obviously we gave up a lot of goals last year, but, you know, it's a brand new year this year and we're just looking forward to, you know, making moves forward.
That was Zach Bogosian from earlier at MTS Iceplex after finishing his first skate as part of training camp. He was part of Group A that practiced at 9 a.m. this morning.
You know, Drew, when the interview is playing, we're not on air. You're shushing me again.
Well, that's because I'd like to hear the interview. I don't know what you're rambling incoherently about.
He sounds polished for a 21-year-old, and he looks like he's 30. So there's a certain you know, air to the guys who have been top prospects for a long period of time since they're 15, 16. They deal with the hype. So it's 5 years in the running. He seems, you know, for a 21-year-old guy, certainly seems good with the media. And if you look at him, he looks like he's 25 or 30.
You learn very quickly about how to be polished. You know, it jumps out at me. You remember when Mark Scheifele was drafted and that first interview he gave and how he was so exuberant and everything else and he looked like a kid.
I was there.
Yeah, exactly. You were there. You could speak to it better than anybody, how he looked like a kid in a candy shop being drafted. And now when he gets interviewed, and a lot of these guys get interviewed, that's like they're old pros at it and they just sort of keep calm and they give the same sort of, you know, base answers and whatever else.
Why don't we talk about Doughty?
Let's talk about Doughty. No progress there. It sounds like it's even getting the relationship sounds like it's getting even worse.
Yeah, Drew, there's no Doughty about it.
With
part of the Rolodex.
Yeah, with with the Kings now saying that, you know, the longer he sits out and if he ends up missing games, the offer is going to go down in accordingly. It's
that
just
doesn't,
a
that doesn't work
bad
with,
situation.
It doesn't work with Drew Doughty. That doesn't work.
No,
he's too good.
Yeah,
I mean, if you're dealing with a player like Kyle Turris and you say that, it might work because Kyle Turris is asking for way more money than he's worth right now in Phoenix. But in terms of Drew Doughty, you know, they're offering 6.5. They want him to take him a 7-year deal, take him into his 10th year of playing in the National Hockey League. Again, as we said, 7 years makes you a UFA, so that's buying out some UFA years. They're pretty adamant about a long-term deal. Drew Doughty is arguably a top three National Hockey League defenseman right now.
At 20 years old.
He is as gifted as it gets with his hands. He has vision. He can skate. He is as good as it gets, guys.
Yep.
And so when they're negotiating, he's at 21 years old. Maybe you say Shea Weber is better now. Okay. But he's 21 years old. He is, they don't have, I mean, maybe the player doesn't have leverage. We talked about the leverage aspect before. The Jets are going to be bad, so Bogosian didn't have much leverage, okay? Mm-hmm. Shen maybe had some, but, like, in reality, the Leafs have a lot of defensemen. Whether they're quality or not, it's a different story. They have a lot of defensemen.
I think
Shen needs
to
get done.
I think Shen has leverage simply because the media in Toronto wouldn't let him not be signed.
But in L.A.,
They're poor defensively, too.
L.A. is going to rely on Doughty to be one of their best players for a long time.
And, Richie, I don't want to cut you off here, and they're on the cusp. They're on the cusp of being a great team. With the acquisition of Mike Richards, right? And that factors into it,
of course,
right?
Yeah, but look at it from a macro level.
Yeah.
There's no NBA this year.
Right.
If there's and there's no football in Los Angeles.
Right.
So there's no football aside from USC. There's no football. There's probably not going to be an NBA season.
Yeah.
The Dodgers stink, and they have ownership issues.
Yeah.
That city is for the taking. The ownership, Dean Lombardi likes to have a lot of personal grudges, okay?
Yeah.
This is the time for them. Without Drew Doughty, you mentioned Mike Richards, the addition. You know, they got rid of Ryan Smith. They brought in, why am I forgetting the other big significant player they brought in? Winger. Any event, we'll pull that up. Drew Doughty, without Drew Doughty, they can't take that next step. This is the time.
Was it Marco Sturm?
No, he's on Vancouver.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I'll pull it up. If the computer
this is the time. They have to get it done. Drew Doughty has leverage here because he's one of the best defensemen in the world. Clearly their best defenseman.
Ethan Morrow?
He's on Columbus.
Stop talking.
He might be L. I forget where he's on. Honestly, they just don't. They need him to move forward. They need him to be the best player. They need him to win the Stanley Cup.
It's bad for the on-ice product, and it's just bad for the team's development and his development.
And it's bad PR. And if they're going to be getting attention, Drew Doughty's living in Toronto. You think he cares what the two L.A. papers, good writers there, but the two L.A. papers, does he think he cares what Helene Elliott's writing about him in the L.A. Times? He doesn't care.
He wants to get paid. What do you think about L.A. drawing these arbitrary lines and you won't get more money than Anzi Kopitar?
Simon Gagné.
Yeah, Simon Gagné. Attaboy, Timmy.
Thank you.
They did pick up Morrow, too, though.
Oh, Morrow. That's right.
Yeah, I think Morrow's more significant in a way, but...
Then who?
No, I'm kidding.
Okay. But no, go back to that.
Doughty is a better player. Would anybody argue that Doughty's more important and better than Anzi Kopitar?
Kopitar, with Mike Richards there, playing harder ice time, may very well have a great year. I love Anzi Kopitar. I think he's a great player. Mm-hmm. But you could argue that Drew Doughty is, you know...
Are we talking Anzi more Kopitar's valuable? Or are we talking better player, different positions?
Yes.
Yeah,
it is an arbitrary. That's a little bit arbitrary.
But this, I mean, why are you saying, no, you won't get paid more than Anzi Kopitar? If you mean more to the team, Drew Doughty is one of the top three defensemen in the NHL.
If there is a 20-year-old or 21-year-old, I'm not sure if he turned 21 yet, if there's one defenseman that should be paid $7 million, it's not even a question that it should be him.
Tyler Myers' contract did not help. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
Tyler Myers' contract, I know we have Roy McGregor coming up here, but the Tyler Myers contract did not help Drew Doughty.
He's a great
defenseman. Not help LA.
He's a great defenseman, but he's not in Doughty's league.
5.5 a year for 7 years, right? 6 years.
Yeah. 7 years, $38.5 million.
So 7 years,
$5.5
a year. So you're going to offer Drew Doughty 7 years, $6.5? Drew Doughty can say, hey, well, I was the best defenseman in the Olympics against the best players in the world. I'm a pretty dominant defenseman. Tyler Myers is good, but he's not as good as me.
Based on the comparables, I think you could you not, Richie? And I mean, once again, you know, I'm not someone who's as good analytically with contracts as you. Could you not make an argument that he's a $7 million defenseman?
The argument can be made.
Yeah,
especially for the duration of the contract they're throwing out.
If you're talking 7 years, you give him $49 million and you say thank you very much.
You're throwing 38. Hey, Tyler Myers, great defenseman, big guy.
Yeah.
Has played well in 2 years. He struggled a little bit last year, but unfortunately,
Doughty deserves more.
Bit of an overpay for Myers, in my opinion.
Well, Doughty deserves more than Myers, and unfortunately for
Myers wasn't even an RFA this year.
Yeah, and unfortunately for the LA Kings, the Buffalo Sabres are throwing around contracts like they're drunk. So it works. So that
I also love how you hear on TSN the insider trading segment they have that the GMs are going to say, you know, we want to make sure these things are rectified. Hold on a second. It's you guys who are handing out the contracts.
Yep. Exactly. You can't protect them from themselves is what it boils down to. Let's go to break. When we come back on the other side, he's from the Globe and Mail. He's Roy McGregor. He's going to be joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.